It is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
It finally happened. After 15 long years of mediocrity mixed with postseason failings and plenty of pain, the New York Yankees have won their 41st American League pennant and are going to the World Series. But before we get into that, hello everyone. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd, and welcome to the Nosebleeds. I am Tucker Austin, joined today, this afternoon, by two Knicks, Nick Palmer and Nick Guzman. Producing for us today is Grace McCarron. She's behind the board. And guys, the World Series is approaching fast. We're coming up on Friday now for this World Series. And how are we feeling about it right now? Palmer, let's start with you.
How am I feeling about this? Dude, 1981 was the last time that my Dodgers and Yankees played each other. And, yeah, I said that right.
My Dodgers and Yankees.
It literally sends a chill down my spine.
Let's clarify. I'm going to give a one-minute breakdown to anyone who doesn't know. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I grew up there for 18 years. However, I spent a lot of my summers here in New York City. What happens in the summertime? What sports going on?
Baseball's going on. Major League Soccer.
Super true, which, love NYCFC.
There you go.
But
baseball, of course.
Yeah, baseball's going on. But there are also about 4 or 5 months where baseball is going on in Los Angeles, and I'm in Los Angeles. So naturally, I've watched both teams for a good portion of my life. The Dodgers since I was 3, listening to Vin Scully growing up. Yankees probably more recently, I think 2017, 2016 was when I started really getting into them. I'd been to games before, and you know, I'd seen Jeter, and I was at that 2008 All-Star game at Yankee Stadium, where Ichiro in late innings, I was asleep in the grandstands.
Yeah.
Anyway, just to say, a lot of history between these two teams. My favorite player ever, Russell Martin, both a Dodger and a Yankee. This is special for me. So, everyone's saying pick a team. I have picked a team for who I want and who I think is going to win this World Series, and we'll get into that. But there you go.
I'm going to be honest, that like all of that context, like really, I did not know about all of the context regarding that. And I think since you brought up the fact that they haven't played in the World Series since 1981, it actually makes a lot more sense how you could like rationalize being both a Yankee and a Dodger fan, because they never came to blows.
And they never played each other until Interleague started about 4 or 5 years ago. So it wasn't a problem until Interleague play started.
And here's what I'll say. I still don't like it. In fact, I hate it. I understand where you're coming from, but I'm going to come to your defense a little bit. Like the Dodgers being like this 100-win juggernaut it's a pretty more recent thing. And I mean, early 2000s, early 2010s, like the Dodgers weren't this evil empire necessarily that people were.
At least not perennial National League contenders.
Yes.
Dude, they made the playoffs 14 of the last 15
Yes,
seasons,
but what I'm saying is recently, I mean, this is one of the better periods in Dodgers history in terms of regular season success.
It's
so I think
like,
now it seems like it's worse on paper because both teams are maybe the best team in the American League, best team in the National League.
It makes me seem like a lot more of a bandwagoner.
Yes,
but
it does.
But at least he has the history.
When
He's
I was watching
here.
This team with Rafael Furcal at shortstop and like D. Gordon and all of these scrubs in like 2011, it was tough. It was tough.
So,
and there were some Yankee years, as Tucker knows, which were incredibly tough in the 2010s.
Yep.
And more recently, 2022. That was.
But still, it's like it's like wah wah. Like
okay,
you know.
But regardless, now that we understand a little bit more of the plight of Nick Palmer, let's break down the end of the Mets season before we get to the Yankees. Before we get to the World Series. Oh boy, he brought out the towels.
Some Let's Go Mets towels.
For our listeners at home, these are Let's Go Mets towels. This will not...
I think I stole one of these from Grace, so give it back to her.
I'm definitely not holding on to this one, but the Mets. Unfortunately, their wild roller coaster ride of a season has finally come to an end. The Grimace Mets are no more. I think they should leave it in this year, but who knows, maybe it'll still be around next year. But the Mets go down in six games to the mighty Dodgers. And really, from the whole series, I guess, and Guzman, we'll start with you this time because you're the Mets guy here. Like, I get not really what went wrong, but like, I guess, like, there's pride in this Mets team, right? There's pride in this loss.
So, like, I'm very sad and disappointed, but I'm not mad. I think the Dodgers are a better team. I think they proved that. I think for the Mets to win this series, they needed to do a couple things they didn't do. They had to shell Dodgers starting pitching, which they didn't do. Sure, game five, they got Jack Flaherty. Game one, they did not at all. Game two is a bullpen game, Landon Ack, whatever. They win that. But then, you know, game three, you let Walker Buehler off the hook when there was traffic on the bases, couldn't come through with that big hit. Game four, same thing with Yamamoto. And then it just set it up for the Dodgers bullpen, which is elite, to kind of mow down the Mets. And in general, it was a lack of clutchness with runners in scoring position and not getting those runs across. And I think once it got to those sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth innings where the Dodgers' A relievers could be out there, I think the Mets didn't really stand a chance.
I'll be real. I was cockier than I actually felt going into the series. Yeah. I was letting it eat. I was like a little bit scared, and I'll tell you why. Yamamoto had some really bad outings throughout the year, and any game could have snake bitten him, and he just happened to put up a good start. Walker Buehler, oh my God, seeing him step out there. Grace and I were there at that game. I was terrified. Walker Buehler was not good at all this year, and to put that faith in him and for him to do that, I'm sure part of it is the Mets, you know, not getting those swings when they need him, but I thought his breaking stuff had a lot of, like, movement to it. I thought he was crisp, a lot of bite on the curveball. I was really impressed, and I'm not certain that they're going to be able to put up ace performances against the Yankees.
And then the other thing is, when you think about how, I guess you could say, subpar the Mets bullpen is, especially when you line it up against a bullpen like the Dodgers, the Mets needed guys like Manaea, they needed Severino, they needed Quintana to go deep. Yeah. As they did in the Philly series, as they did against the Brewers, it kind of helps hide that bullpen, and you can get to Diaz quicker, get to Stanek quicker. But when you really only have 1.5 reliable relievers in your bullpen, I'd say Edwin Diaz and Ryan Stanek most of the time.
Yeah.
Besides that, like, Phil Maton was great down the stretch. He had an 8 ERA in the playoffs.
SRF hurt?
Sean Reed Foley hurt. And then when it comes to everybody else in that bullpen, you know, the Mets opted to leave Adam Ottavino off the roster. I don't think he would have helped at all. Wouldn't have helped at all. But the point is, there was a formula for the Mets to win this series. They had to get to Dodger starters early. They had to protect their bullpen. That did not happen. The Dodgers were the better team. But me, myself, as a Mets fan, I'm not mad because, you know, it was a fun ride.
You weren't supposed to be here. Let's be real.
We weren't supposed to be here.
At the All-Star break, you weren't supposed to be here. And I said there was no way the Mets were going to make the playoffs.
I mean, 11. Everyone knows 11 games under 500, started off 0-5, all that. And then even when it comes down to down the stretch, even in August, the Mets were two or three games out and managed to claw their way back in September, get in, miraculously beat the Brewers with that Pete Alonso home run, kind of dismantle the Phillies, and then the run stops here.
That was an impressive series against the Phillies. Yes. I'm going to give that
to the
you.
Phillies.
There was some magic.
I don't
going
know
on.
What was going on with Philly,
here's
to
what,
be real.
Here's what, offensively, the Phillies are like the antithesis of the Dodgers. Like, the Phillies were swinging at everything.
Yeah.
Everything outside the zone, which is where, like, a guy like Jose Quintana lives, outside the zone. The Dodgers are so annoying to watch sit in the box. Like, Max Muncy, that guy grinds my gears.
Max Muncy's an awesome hitter, dude.
They don't swing. And it was frustrating, but this Mets staff has had problem with walks all season long. I think that was the difference, was approach to the plate. Dodgers waiting for their pitch, but also being aggressive when there was a meatball in the middle of the zone.
And, like, shout out to the bottom of the Dodgers order, man.
Tommy Edman, NLCS MVP.
Tommy Edman wins NLCS MVP. This is important, Tucker. The Dodgers, as we mentioned earlier, they set a record for postseason runs in a series in all time. That's pretty awesome. I think it was 44.
Who's counting?
Something like that. Anyway, sorry. That seemed rude for me in a way. I was actually just trying to confirm. So him, also Andy Pages having that two home run game, I thought was huge for him. Everyone got it done, especially with Freddie, who's, you know, ailing from that ankle, and we're unsure how he's going to be doing. And the bullpen was fantastic.
There's no way he misses a World Series game, right?
No.
There's no chance.
Dude, if Nestor is going to be like, yo, if I can't pitch. Did you see this from Nestor?
Yeah.
He says, it's dog okay energy. If I can't pitch next season, mm-hmm. I'm pitching in
He's
the
like,
World
if we
Series.
Get the ring and I get a year off from baseball, that's best case scenario.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, we'll get into more of Nestor Cortez when we talk about the Yankees. But for the Mets, obviously their season comes to a close. That Game 6 was just tough because, like you mentioned, the Dodgers bullpen is really, really good.
Even with that being said, there were chances for the Mets to get back in. Jesse Winker coming up with the bases loaded when they're only down by three. You know, a base hit there, and it's a whole different game. But in throughout the series, there were chances like that for the Mets, and they just didn't come through.
Unfortunately, though, the Mets did dig their own grave kind of early. In the third inning, Tommy Edman goes yard, and Will Smith goes yard later in the inning. Both two-run home runs. That made the score 6-1 in the third, and the Mets were not able to recover after that. They kept tacking on runs, or the Dodgers kept tacking on runs as the game went on. And then Kodai Senga, between his start and then this appearance in Game 6, where he coughs up three in an inning and two-thirds late, like it moved the goalpost the last time.
That counts like nothing for me, having Kodai Senga coming in the bullpen.
It is rough
like,
to have a starter come out of the bullpen.
A healthy Kodai Senga is the ace of this staff. He was not right, whatever it was. I mean, last year he didn't ERA under three and was supposed to be the ace of the staff coming to this year.
It felt forced.
It felt like we didn't have enough in our bullpen without Kodai Senga. We felt like, okay, we have this maybe wild card potentially that we could throw into our bullpen or into our rotation.
Yeah.
It was kind of a desperation move, and it didn't work out.
And just one more thing about the Dodgers lineup going into that NLCS was Will Smith and Teoscar Hernandez were not hitting. For the last three...
Wasn't for the start of the series,
No. Will Smith had not hit for about a month and a half. It was a long, long slump. I think really since, like, mid-September, early September, he hadn't been hitting. Teoscar didn't hit in San Diego and hadn't been hitting at the end of the season. So for them to come out of that slump, now it's 1-9. It's at, like, all of the fears of that, like, at the beginning of the season, it was, man, if the Dodgers 1-9, if they're all hitting, that's the scariest lineup in base. It's sort of the same thing with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Now it's happening at the right time, and you tack on NLCS MVP Tommy Edman. I'm terrified.
Yeah, and so that did it for the Mets season playing baseball. Earlier today, just a couple hours ago, actually, the president of baseball operations for the New York Mets, David Stearns, met with the media for his postseason wrap-up. Bunch of topics were touched.
Anything
the possibility of hiring a general manager was actually thrown around, but he said he was happy with the front office this year so far, so he's not really looking into that. However, Pete Alonso did come up.
Okay.
That's a pretty big one.
And what did he say?
Pretty much said, like, actually, I'll quote directly from the New York Post. Pete deserves to go out into the free agent market and see what's out there and then ultimately make the best choice for him and his family. So, kind of sounds exactly like what the Giants said to Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
Kind of sounds like we will sign him if we want to pay, if the price is right.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that postseason performance did make his price jump a little bit,
I'll take that
home run.
The clutch was there. The clutch was there more so than the actual stats were. And I say that when he had like a 900. He almost had like an 1,000 OPS. So it definitely was a very, very solid postseason.
10 RBIs, yeah.
Yeah, he did strike out 15 times, walking 12 times.
He walked 12 times. That's fine. That's fine to me, dude.
Neutralizes it a little bit. The only other thing that came from that press conference was his talk about Carlos Mendoza, where David Stearns praised Carlos Mendoza, and deservedly so. I think it's unbelievable that a first-year manager could come in, as Carlos Mendoza did, and be dealt like the worst hand imaginable in your first month and a half, 2 months as a manager, but to remain composed. He did not change once throughout the season. Like, his composure was just calm, collected, and he just made sure to keep the ship mostly right, and that got his team to within 2 wins of the World Series.
And just one more thing about the Mets lineup, which David Stearns, I'm sure, is like shaking his head about. He's like, man, we got JD Martinez, and he just didn't show up in the NLCS.
No. That's a risk they had to take.
Like, when you're talking about JD Martinez, he was carrying this offense in, like, June
and July.
And then one of probably the worst slumps I've ever seen in September. It was, like, 0 for 30 plus. And he was unusable. And then I think a mistake from Carlos Mendoza was playing JD in games 3 and 4. I think you had to stick with Winker, who had a great postseason, and then was great in game 5 as well. But, you know, I'm not going to hold that against Carlos, because you expect – it's not a bad move to put JD Martinez into your playoff lineup as a veteran hitter who's done it before.
And what a great first year as manager for Carlos Mendoza of the Mets. Like, I got obviously, we know him and love him because he had been on the Yankees bench for many years.
Clearly, he picked something up from his time. He picked something up. Some kind of a winning culture.
We know, like, Seve loves him, and, like, they've known each other for many years, but it seems like everyone loves him. And that's what happens, honestly, when you work under a player's coach like Aaron Boone for a while.
Yeah.
You pick that up. You pick up how you get the best out of your players. So, shout out Carlos Mendoza.
It's clear all the Mets players love him, and the front office does too, and so do the fans. I'll just say this to wrap up the Mets, because there's bigger and more important things to talk about.
Are there?
Yeah.
The teams that didn't get eliminated.
I think so.
If you would have told me earlier this season that we would lose in Game 6 of the NLCS, I would have taken that any day of the week. And I still feel that way. Based on where we were, based on the ride we got taken on, all the clutch hits, I wouldn't trade it for the world. So I'm not mad. I'm not disappointed. I'm disappointed, of course. You never want to lose. But the Dodgers were, I think, objectively a better team, and they executed better in this NLCS. And I think there's so much money coming off the payroll for the Mets heading into next season, just dead money that's going to be able to reallocate it other places. There's potential free agents out there too. There's some big names. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not even talking about Juan Soto.
Okay.
But pitching wise, there's some big names you can add. Yeah. Starters. Maybe bring back Sean Manaea. There's things that you can do to improve this squad to make them win more than the 89 games. And I think there's a lot of reason to be hopeful heading into the next season under year 2 of Carlos Mendoza. But I think all things considered, a very successful season for these New York Mets.
And see, that'll do it.
I wasn't that obnoxious.
No. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Your Instagram stories rattled me a little bit.
Oh, that's...
They rattled me a little bit.
Yeah.
Like Sunday night, I could feel my face getting hot in
bed. Good.
So
good.
You rattled me. Yes. But.
All right.
But that does it for the Mets, not only for this segment, but for the season, unfortunately, for Mets fans. But you know what they say in Queens? There's always next year. That's anyway, true. Moving
next
on.
Next year never comes.
Moving on to the team in New York that is still in the playoffs, thank God.
Yeah.
The New York Yankees are going to the World Series. Oh, I just keep wanting to say it over and over again. It feels so good to say it and have it be true.
It's amazing.
It's like a different feeling.
It's awesome.
So ALCS in 5 games. I was a little more afraid of the Guardians than I think I should have been. Just because the Yankees have had history with the Guardians the past few times they've made the playoffs now. I remember that division series against the Guardians. I believe it was 20. It was in 22. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that one was tight.
Oh,
that was like that was a 5-game set.
Harrison Bader was a hero.
He was. And I was stressing during that series. So going into this series, I was like, well, the Guardians, they definitely don't look like they don't look worse than they did then. If anything, they look better.
Yeah,
Clase was not, no pun intended, the class of the league this year in terms of relievers.
I didn't like that. Did you like that?
Class A was the Class A of the... Yeah, no.
The Class A?
No,
well,
no,
I mean, I just
like
said
either.
Class of...
No.
League,
overruled.
Is,
go ahead. Overruled.
Is what it
keep
is.
Keep going, though.
Strictly from the record.
But
we're
going to
remember that, though, but keep going.
I guess we'll start with Game 5 and then, like, series overall.
Okay.
But a 5-2 win in 10 innings in Game 5. Carlos Rodon did not go super deep, but he gave enough of a performance. And I, like, just... Carlos Rodon for the whole series.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. Like... This is not the Carlos Rodon that we've seen as a Yankee ever.
No, it's the one that they paid for.
Exactly. And it having it show up now is insane to me. I didn't really know what to expect out of him.
They gave him 8 years. It was going to happen eventually. He was having those back issues the year earlier, and he had that arm issue. Yeah, it was... Look, I was never on the train that I was like, oh my God, we're going to have to buy out Carlos Rodon. That was never on the table for me.
Yeah.
And look, it did go 5 games this series. Each one of them was an epic game. Like, I want to give the Guardians credit because you say that you were more afraid of them than you were. Nope, that I was afraid of the entire series. And that's if a couple pitches go differently, that's a Game 7 situation there.
I wasn't expecting the Yankees hitters to be as in control of their at-bats as they were during this series. Because during the Royals series, I saw them getting on the back foot a lot and like Royals pitching kind of taking advantage of early one or two strike counts and just kind of like just working through the Yankees order. They made each and every one of the, or almost all of the Yankees made themselves incredibly tough outs every single at bat. And I mean, there you could pretty much, you could say like five or six names and go down the list, but I'm going to like say the one name that probably deserves to be said more than anybody, not even the MVP necessarily, but it's Juan Soto.
Oh, that was not who I was
Juan Soto's at bat.
Oh, that
in
one
game five. No, but that was, that's all of his at bats
ever.
Haven't
you watched it like a million times already?
Oh my, I watched it 30 times the night of.
Yeah.
Juan Soto's at bat, that was one of the greatest single at bats I've ever seen. And I saw a lot of people saying that. I saw like I saw MLB Network going nuts over it, but this was honestly one of the best at bats. And for Soto, all of his at bats look like that, where he just has control, forces the pitcher to throw him the pitch that he wants, and then when he gets that, he got that fastball upstairs, he knew exactly what to do with it.
I mean, he is literally the best plate discipline in all of baseball.
Yeah.
It's unreal. And in that spot, to be that patient, to be able to wait for that pitch that you want, and even with that being said, like, that ball was hit so high, I was not sure that it was getting out, and it just kept carrying.
It spun.
It didn't know either.
It just kept carrying and carrying. And just what an incredibly clutch home run to hit. I mean, it's a like Judge hasn't really shown up in these playoffs so far. He has, but
this series, he showed up.
If you look at the batting average, I mean, compared to what everybody else has been doing in that lineup, it says something that your MVP and the best hitter in baseball can be not performing up to his standards, which is fair to say, overall in these playoffs. But when you have Stanton being playoff Stanton, you have Soto taking those at-bats and hitting those clutch home runs.
Yeah.
Gleyber Torres has been so good in the leadoff spot. It just, all of a sudden, what the narrative throughout this whole Yankee season with how their lineup was not deep, all of a sudden,
it's the deepest lineup in baseball.
It's
out of nowhere.
I mean, the Dodgers.
God, these are the two. This is the debate.
I don't
even
know
why we have the show.
I'm not even sure. Like, I think the Yankees lineup, if like say Jazz Chisholm starts to hit the ball a little bit,
okay, that's a big what if.
It's a big if. It's one of the. It's probably the biggest if on the Yankees right now.
Yeah,
but like,
he hasn't
hit
for
a
while.
Even if you leave Austin Wells in the lineup and he's a complete hole, which he's basically been, save the one home run that he hit.
Which was at the end of the series.
Yeah.
And like, it was a big home run.
It was a good home run. It was a good home run, but like I still think maybe like we got to still be having the conversation about starting Trevino and going to Wells in a late inning for a, like a hitting matchup.
Is
like
Jose
against a righty
Trevino
pitcher.
Just an equal hole, though, to Austin Wells? And
that's why you can interchange them.
Right, but wouldn't
you
rather?
You'd rather control the running game, right?
I know. And Jose Trevino has a noodle for an arm, bro.
Well, he does now.
The Red Sox set the...
You want a platinum glove like two seasons ago,
dude,
partly for his performance against the
That was all framing IMO. He wasn't... The caught stealing
was
ridiculous. He was first in the league in framing that year, but, dude, I watched the Red Sox steal 11 bases on him in one game, okay? I watched them set a record. This guy cannot throw people out in the way that Austin Wells can, and that is fine, but it's important, especially when you have Shohei Ohtani, who stole 58 bases, coming up against you.
Yeah.
It's really important.
All right, so yeah, definitely need to control the run game then.
That said, talking about plate discipline, which you touched on, Anthony Volpe, remarkable series.
Yeah.
OPS was over 800, man. Dude, in a play, that's
gotta
who we need right there. It seems like every at-bat for Anthony Volpe was no longer, oh my God, Volpe's up. He's going to strike out on a slider away. Now it's like, all right, I want to see him working at-bat, and he does it a lot. Anthony Rizzo had some excellent at-bats. He got some clutch hits
and some clutch walks. Those were some kind of crazy hits, too. Like, he's fighting off pitches on the inside and slapping them
gritty
into low or like left center field just outside the infield.
That shows you that the process is right, though. If maybe he's not catching up to it, but if your swing path and the process is right, that's what's going to happen. So I'm really excited about this Yankees lineup and the discipline that they've been showing, because everyone talks about the Dodgers' discipline, but Yank's discipline is excellent as well.
We should give give the proper flowers to the man who was named ALCS MVP. His name is Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah.
In high school, his nickname was Scantron. Early in his baseball career, he went by Mike. So I still call him Mike from time to time. But Giancarlo Stanton, playoff Stanton is something else. It's amazing to watch an entire season unfold where large portions, and I would say at some points majorities of the Yankee fan base are like calling for Stanton's head. They want him out of the lineup. They want his contract off the payroll.
And now they want him in Monument Park.
Now he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But that's what one really incredible postseason can do for a player. And they've even like major sources have been talking, like ESPN, MLB, they've all been saying like Giancarlo Stanton's Hall of Fame credentials are getting really, really good now because of this postseason. Yeah. And if the Yankees get a ring this postseason, it could almost be guaranteed that he's going to the Hall.
And the remarkable thing is, you know how many hits Giancarlo Stanton had in this series? He had 4. You know how many of those hits were home runs? 4. That is an unbelievable stat. Yeah. And
well, he broke Ruth's
a postseason home run record.
Yeah. Postseason home run. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's the rate at which Ruth hit home runs.
Yeah.
Ruth was at 9.1. 9.1 at bats per home run.
Yeah.
I think Stan's at like 8.9, 8.8.
He's getting there.
Crazy. Goose, watching Stanton from a distance, there's no one who swings like him.
No.
There's no one who stands there with his front foot ahead, flat footed, and just swings their arms. Have you watched like slow mo and looked at his eyes? He's not watching the ball when he swings. He's up there, he like looks at it, and he goes, he's either I'm swinging or I'm not swinging. And to get that kind of result, it pisses me off because he's the opposite of Juan Soto.
Oh,
Juan
yeah.
Soto is tracking that ball all the way. He's like, you watch him nodding up and down after every pitch. He's like, okay, all right, I'm starting to figure out. Stan just goes, I'm going to plant my feet. If I see the ball, I'm going to swing as hard as I can. And it's working so well, I hate it.
And you mentioned what Juan Soto does after taking a pitch. Like, normally he'll look it right in, and then he'll nod or something.
Yeah.
He'll like register the pitch. Stanton, when he takes a pitch, first of all, his head doesn't really move back, so he doesn't track it into the glove.
He doesn't step out
and
of the box.
He doesn't step out of the box, and he just kind of he stands there. He like his bat hits his shoulder, and he just kind of gets set. He looks at the ground. He gets mentally ready.
Oh, my God.
And then he looks at the pitcher.
How is this
go-time.
Guy the greatest postseason hitter we've ever
it's
seen?
It's insane, but like.
It's not right.
Because he's ridiculously strong.
Exactly. So you have to think
like
about the fact his arms are so big that really, as long as he just gets the barrel to the ball, it's going to leave.
My aunt is in love with him.
It's
My aunt loves Giancarlo.
And the home runs that he hits, too, they're always no doubters because they're line drives that are going, like, they're going to hit a top seat.
I think
the term
is piss missile.
That would be what I would call most of Stan's.
Oh my God.
Most of Stan's contact.
Like on his last home run, they were playing the replay, and my aunt texts me, "Look at how amazing his arms look on that slow mo shot." And I'm like, "All right, you're married."
One more name that I want to mention for the Yankees before we move on. I mean, first of all, their entire bullpen has been stepping up.
Yeah. And Cole shoved.
All series. Yeah, Cole shoved. Cole will be pitching in game one on Friday.
Against Jack Flaherty.
Mm-hmm. But the biggest, or the pitcher that I want to mention by name before we move on to the World Series is Luke Weaver. Because how can you not mention
Luke Weaver,
the Dream Weaver.
Lou Guiver.
Come on, man. Like, he is... To get lit up a little bit in Game 4 and, like, blow the save... was it a save? I forget if they were tied or not. I think it may have been tied.
It was a save opportunity.
But it was a save... Okay, yeah. So...
It was a save opportunity.
So he blows a save in Game 4 to clinch a sweep. And that could throw most relievers completely off their game for the rest of the postseason.
Yeah.
I was half expecting Luke Weaver to not be usable for the rest of the series because I thought the Guardians finally got to him like the Yankees got to Class A. But he comes back out for Game 5 and just slams the door in the face of the Guardians. And for a reliever to do that, for a closer to do that, the confidence is through the roof. The stuff is there.
His slider makes me want to throw up.
It's absolutely disgusting.
It's not nice.
And I have full, 115% confidence in Luke Weaver as a 4-5 out closer in the World Series against the Dodgers.
That's the problem, though, is that the Dodgers have, like, 3 Luke Weavers. Like, I'm sorry, but Blake Treinen and Anthony Banda put together 4.
The Yankees got to Blake Treinen when he was an A.
This is when he was an A and before he got into the Dodgers pitching lab, which they yoinked from the Tampa Bay Rays, if you'll remember.
This is a side note. Anthony Bonda, a couple years ago, came up for like one game with the Mets.
Did he really?
An extra innings game in Cincinnati.
I didn't know about this.
And he wasn't good at all. This was 2021, I want to say. I think it was 2021.
He was a diamond in the rough, Goose.
And I never would I think that that was a guy that you'd be potentially scared of in a
diamond in the rough
bullpen. But kudos.
Hey, but we gave you Phil Bickford, so it worked out.
It evens out.
It worked out.
One for one.
So the Yankees.
Phil Bickford.
The Yankees are the American League champions. The Mets were eliminated by the National League champion Los Angeles Dodgers. It's L.A. and NYC in the World Series starting this weekend, Friday night at 8:08. All the games start at 8:08. Thought that was kind of fun. It's the Ken Carson World Series. But
yeah, no need for a 5 o'clock start when there's nothing to compete
Who needs
with.
5 o'clock starts? It's eight across the board. All the games are on Fox. And I know exactly where I will be for every single game, and that is watching on Fox, because these ticket prices are absolutely insane.
I know.
Really, like, blow your minds. Like, I was expecting close to 1,000 for Yankees home games, somewhere in that ballpark. Maybe dipping under 1,000 when
we get into the
upper echelon.
Let me take a look.
I have SeatGeek pulled up.
Okay, I like TickPick. We're not advertising.
No, we're not. No, no. There's no ads here, but this is just what we're looking at for ticket prices. On SeatGeek, on these ticket prices, I'm looking at $1,800.
Okay,
in the fourth deck,
I've got Game 4 for $1,400.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, dude, that's reasonable.
That's a bargain,
dude. I'll be there,
standing room only.
Yeah, no, and like most of these are standing room only anyway. Like I think I saw something like the minimum price the other day for standing room only was like $1,300, but like these are all for seats. Actually, that's a standing room only
this
for $1,100 for game one.
This sucks, dude.
Anybody for 11 for game
11?
One? 1,100?
Mm. Oh!
1,100.
I'll see you guys there. Wait, you found 1,100 not standing room?
I think it is standing room.
No.
Yeah.
1,100 for a seat, dude, I'm there.
Yeah. Oh, I wasn't kidding. Okay.
Anyway, I don't think...
Dude, 41 years. When am I going to
see that?
That's
true.
This is
true. It's the two biggest markets, the biggest team from the West Coast, biggest team from the East Coast, the two biggest teams in baseball, really.
You see, the prudent investor will wait until the 2025 World Series when these two teams go at it again, and then the prices are cheaper because it just happened.
Mm.
But that would obviously...
You mean when Ohtani and Glasnow are pitching next year?
Someone else is going to hurt their arm. Like,
But
it won't be Ohtani.
It won't be Ohtani.
With this Dodgers team not being necessarily at full force, or at least the full force that they would like to be.
Starting pitching.
And, like, I mean, Freddie Freeman's not fully healthy either.
No, not particularly. But Max Muncy's a god right now.
Yeah.
And Teo and Will
really
Smith
well.
And Mookie. And.
But anyway, like, with all of that, I think it just, obviously, it gives the Yankees a better chance to win the series. But
yeah,
I guess, the first thing I'll ask is basically the MLB's dream.
Mm.
Who has a better World Series? Aaron Judge? Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani.
I think Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani
is
immune to pressure.
Shohei Ohtani,
it is gross.
I was like scared every time he stepped up to the plate. Like the only guy who sort of figured him out was Manaea in game two, but then it didn't really matter because he figured him out in game six.
In game six.
But
yeah.
He was locked in. And I think just based on who's hot and who's not right now, Shohei Ohtani is mashing the baseball and is really leading these Dodgers.
Yeah.
Now, Nick, like you said, though, or I forget who actually mentioned that Judge's series in the ALCS actually wasn't bad.
No.
And it could be an indication of a trend in the right direction for Aaron Judge, too.
It was a weird home run that he hit, though.
It was kind of weird, but it was an insanely competitive pitch.
100-mile-per-hour
cutter
on
the
outside corner.
And it couldn't have been the bigger spot.
Yeah.
He tied the
game. It wasn't a Mickey Mouse home run because it wasn't at Yankee Stadium. It was right field in Cleveland.
Yes.
Which means, I mean, it would have gone like 10 or 15 rows back at Yankee Stadium.
Right.
But
the wind was crazy.
About
that
short porch, too, the Yankees need to stay on the outside part of the plate when pitching against Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei won't hit it to the short porch, though. Like
I know he can
hit
it anywhere,
hit it
but
over the short
just don't let him beat you on the short porch.
That's the thing, though, is like I'm more worried about Mookie hitting it out over the short porch.
Like, yeah, to the opposite field.
Like, yeah, like Mookie gapping one, that would be a double in Dodger Stadium off the wall, which he does a lot. That's a home run at Yankee Stadium. That's like when Torres is going right and he's hitting all those like porch jobs the opposite way.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. So I'm worried about that, if anything. Shohei is going to hit it over the porch anyway. It's just whether or not you can beat him on breaking pitches and strike him out. He strikes out a lot. That's how you got to get him.
Yeah.
That's why I like Rodon against Otani. Lefty-lefty. Carlos Rodon has amazing stuff plus. I wouldn't be shocked to see him dominate Otani.
I just need, like, for whatever reason, I still just don't trust what we're seeing from Carlos Rodon. I want to really bad.
Yeah.
But I like my experience with Carlos Rodon over the past, like, over this season and over the portions that we saw him from last season, I'm like waiting for the shoe to drop. I'm waiting for the like one or two inning start where he gives up five or six runs and now we're in a hole. Like,
I mean,
a Carlos Rodon bad start could literally hand the Dodgers the World Series on a silver platter.
So could a Jack Flaherty bad start, happened.
Yeah. And you know? In the Mets series, it was Sean Manaea bad start, Jose Quintana bad start. Like, the Dodgers are gonna hit. Like, the way this lineup is clicking. Okay. Not you want to knock on wood.
Dude, like in San Diego, the first couple games, they were not hitting.
They were not hitting.
And especially last year's postseason. Oh my God. Mookie, Freddie combined.
In that Arizona series.
I think they combined for like 2 for 32. So it happens. And we've just been blessed it hasn't happened yet. It could totally happen, but go ahead.
But if the Dodgers' offense is clicking, it's not going to be to the same level as the Mets series. The Yankees pitching staff is better, and that was a remarkable.
Crazy.
Remarkable six games.
Andy Pajes won't be hitting two home runs against the Yankees.
But
good.
But my point is that if the Dodgers offense is clicking at least somewhere to the same level as they were in the NLCS, the Yankees have to do what the Mets didn't do, and that's you got to attack the Dodgers starting pitchers and get them out of the game as early as you can. You have to force Dave Roberts' hand to make him use that bullpen as much as possible, and it's what the Mets didn't do. If you can get to Jack Flaherty early and then you force Dave Roberts' hand into, does he want to use some of his A-tier guys earlier to chase the game? He didn't do that against the Mets, and it's probably the reason why they won the series. He didn't concede the games, but like he went to his beat.
That game, too, he was like, all right, I see what's going on here.
And he lined things up beautifully for them for those games at Citi Field. So
Shocked. It's terrible.
So Jack Flaherty has, I mean, he's had, what, two elite starts these playoffs and two really bad ones. So which version of him do you see? But I think for the Yankees, you got to be thinking about attacking Flaherty and attacking Yamamoto and attacking Bueller as early as
you can.
You can get to all of them.
These are not like...
The Mets were close to getting to all of them, and they didn't.
It's not.
And that was the difference between winning and losing.
Right. It's not like you're going up against Tariq Skubal and you're like, all right, look, we're going to punt this game.
But it also makes you feel good that the Yankees were able to hit off an elite reliever like Class A in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They've shown the ability to do that. I mean, this is a Cleveland bullpen that is talked about in the same category as the Dodgers bullpen. When you look
at a lot of hurt guys.
A lot of hurt guys, but when
no
you look at it,
they still tout it like they continued to tout any of the relievers that were still there though.
And the Yankees were able to do their thing against them. So that gives you some confidence that the Yankees will be able to hit against this Dodger bullpen. But the first couple of innings are so key for the Yankees to get out to a good start.
And I have a bit of a reservation about that when it comes to the early innings, just because we talk about Cleveland's bullpen being one of the better in the league this year. Like, their starting rotation isn't exactly pumped with gems.
No, not at all.
Like the Guardians starting pitching was just not good. Definitely, I would say probably worse than the Royals starting pitching.
They had the worst starting pitching going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Tanner Bibee was their only, like...
Yeah, and I was not afraid of him for a second.
And they got to him.
But you should be able to get to... If you're a World Series caliber team, you should be able to get to mediocre pitchers. Like, if you can get to good pitchers, that makes you a winner.
Right.
But I haven't seen the Yankees get to good starting pitching. I've seen them get to good relieving.
Dude, the Royals had a good...
But look
good...
at the Royals had a good, like a really good series in terms of the starting pitching. Like, the Yankees couldn't get to Lugo until later on.
Yeah.
They got killed
by Waka one
they
game.
With Waka, and they had trouble with Reagans too.
But that's... Dude, that starting pitching lineup is gross.
Is the Dodgers not at its current level.
It's not.
Walker Buehler's very human right now. Yamamoto's hit or miss.
He's not even human. He's a dog. Not a dog in a good way.
D-O-G, not D-A-W-G.
He's dog water, bro.
On paper, a healthy Dodgers rotation is the most elite rotation in baseball.
Next year.
But right now you have three usable starters, and usable might be a strong term at some point.
No Kershaw, no Glasnow, no Ohtani.
Regardless, Gerrit Cole versus Jack Flaherty in game one.
Give me Cole.
I love Cole there, and especially because I have loved what I've seen from Gerrit Cole on the road pretty much all year. He's pitched worse in Yankee Stadium, weirdly enough, regular season and postseason.
No.
And, like, he was dominant against the Royals in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And I like going to L.A. for game one of the World Series. This is a guy who's been to the World Series before. Like, Gerrit Cole knows what it takes to... Gerrit Cole pitched for the Astros against the Nationals, mm-hmm. right? So I don't think he saw the Dodgers.
He lost in the World Series.
To the Dodgers?
No.
No, to the
Nationals in 2019.
He lost to the Nationals in 2019.
Still, experience is experience. He knows he's been there, and he's taken a loss in the World Series, so I'm sure he does not want to experience
that. Didn't Juan
ever
Soto
again.
Hit a home run off
he
of
did,
him?
He did, in his first postseason at bat, I believe, as a 19-year-old.
They probably talk about that still.
Yeah, they did. Well, they will. They will in the World Series, probably. Yeah. I imagine when Soto comes up, they're going to be like, "Oh, look at him in the last World Series he played in." But regardless, I think that'll just about wrap things up for us today. Game one of the World Series Friday night.
We should make
night.
Predictions real quick.
We should make predictions. We'll go.
Fernando Valenzuela died yesterday.
Rest in peace, Fernando Valenzuela. Of course, I hope they do like a little tribute for him before game one.
My dad saw him at a gas station. I think like a couple years after he retired, said he was a really nice guy. So, rest in peace, Fernando. Fernando Mania forever. It's a big reason why the Dodgers have such a big Hispanic fan base. He really started it in the 90s. So, and now you go to a Dodgers game. I mean, really, like 3/4 of the crowd is Hispanic. So it's a big thing for the Hispanic community.
All right. So, Guzman, we'll start with you. Palmer will go you, and then we'll end with me. Give me the team that's going to win the World Series and how many games they do it in.
I'm going to go Dodgers in 7.
Hmm.
I think it's a really, really close series, but I think the way LA's offense is clicking right now, yes, you have the week off. You don't know if they're going to carry it through, but I think Los Angeles' bullpen and 1-9, it's so, so dangerous offensively, and I think the Yankees are going to have a very good chance. I think it's going to be such a close, close series, but I think the Dodgers edge it out in 7 games.
Nick?
I've got the Yankees in 7.
Okay.
No, I want the Yankees in 7.
How do you watch like this World Series? Like,
You don't know about the spreadsheets?
Oh, you have spreadsheets.
Oh, so when I covered the Yankees Dodgers series this summer at Yankee Stadium, they gave me all 3 games. Very nice of them.
Yeah.
I interviewed Teoscar Hernandez, Blake Treinen.
Yeah.
Really cool guys. I was so conflicted sitting up there in the press box. I was literally having an emotional heart attack. So I had to make spreadsheets of which players I wanted to get a hit against which pitchers.
Oh.
And I did it for every player. And so this way I have a guide of
so
I know what I want.
Okay.
So that said, I want the Yankees in 7, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Yankees haven't won since 2009. Dodgers won in 2020. That's the most obvious reason. The Dodgers pitching, as we've talked about, is making them the favorite to win the World Series next year. Even if they lose this World Series, I still think that they'd be the favorite next year, purely because everyone will be healthy. The Yankees, hey, it's looking good for Juan Soto next year. Is it guaranteed yet? No. And if for some reason Soto slips out the back door and goes to like Philly or Queens, God forbid, the Yankees' odds look a little bit worse, so I'd like them to do it this year in 7 games.
So for me, obviously I am a Yankee fan, so I'm like a little bit biased, but I think game one goes to the Yankees because Gerrit Cole is starting, and
I agree.
Because Jack Flaherty has looked rough in game 5, and I think the Yankees can get to him quick. the bullpen might shut it down, but the Yankees will, you know, put enough together beforehand to hand it off to the bullpen to end the game. Actually, I would love to see like a 7-inning performance out of Cole in game one.
Nice.
It'd be nice, but you know,
it's hard against
can't always have nice things.
But if the Yankees don't score a bunch of runs, I don't even want to see him against Shohei a third time.
Yeah, no,
honestly,
probably not.
I'm giving him two times through the lineup. It doesn't even matter if he shuts them all out, honestly.
So game one, I think, goes to the Yankees. Game two, I'll give to the Dodgers.
I agree.
1-1, take it back to Yankee Stadium. I think the Yankees are going to win this series in 6 games. I think they take 2 at the stadium because October baseball in the Bronx in the World Series is a completely different animal, even more different than the championship series or the division series in Yankee Stadium.
I do believe both Yankee and Dodger Stadium are number 1 and number 2 in terms of seat capacity.
There's going to be a lot of heads. There's
going to be a lot of heads.
Going to be
a lot
of
noise.
Heads. Actually, Dodger Stadium, I think, is huge compared to Yankee Stadium, like by like 7 or 8, it's, maybe 9,000.
Yeah, Dodger
more.
Stadium is the most.
You got the fourth deck up dude.
That's my favorite place to sit. Yeah. I buy tickets, first row, top deck, right behind home plate. You get them for like $8. It's awesome. Go ahead.
Right. So, and just Yankees in 6. I think they'll that last game, game 6, is going to be like. It's going to be similar to what happened with the end of the Mets-Dodgers series, where like, except it'll be flipped script because the Yankees will be the ones trying to save starting pitching, like save Cole for Game 7, obviously, and throw the kitchen sink at the Dodgers in Game 6. Mm-hmm. But with the Yankees bullpen and with a guy like Nestor Cortez coming back, even if his arm is about to fall off, he can give us like two plus innings.
Does that not worry you at all? That like, if he thinks his arm is going to fall off, that it could somehow affect him on the mound?
No, because if you have an injury like that and you're trying to play through it, the only way to successfully play through it is to physically, or not physically, like to mentally forget about it.
What if he implodes because of it the first time they put him in? You're not going to put him in a high leverage situation the first time he comes
probably
out, right?
Not. But like, say he gives up like a couple hits, or he gives up like a home run, like a 3-run jack or something.
Yeah.
I half expect them to just, well, no, because if you put him in the lineup, you can't shut him down for the series after an appearance, because that's like a whole, or actually, no, they could bring somebody in, right? Because Ian Hamilton got hurt, and they brought up Mark Leiter.
Yeah, but
so
Nestor,
if Nestor
would have
goes
to
down,
be hurt. Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously, it would be like a blowout. It would actually be his arm getting blown out in the game, and then he's off the roster.
All right, well, let's not plan
suck.
On his arm exploding.
That would suck, but if he's bad, the Yankees would need to refill that hole. Anyway. Yeah. Dodgers in
7
for Guzman. Yankees in, you said 7?
Mm-hmm.
Yankees in 7 for Palmer. It's Yankees in 6 for me.
All right.
And that's all the time we have for today, guys. This is a great episode. Really excited for the World Series. More so, I don't know if you can be more. But we say goodbye to the Mets after a wild season, and hello to the fall classic between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Yankees. Our sports director here at WFUV is Bobby Chaffardini.
Yeah, it is.
And for Nick Palmer, Nick Guzman, and for Grace McCarron behind the board, I am Tucker Austin saying so long. Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports.